Have you ever had one of those dreams that Jesus had come back and you had been left behind? I know you're probably thinking, yeah, Pastor, this morning when I got to church. And let's see, Pastor Steve's gone, Pastor Brian's gone, Pastor Aaron's gone, the elders are gone, Pastor John's here. But then you look around and you see Alberto Aldrich and the Farrells and Dan Clawson, and you know what, we're safe. We're okay. If they're still here, we haven't missed anything. But you know, it's true. I used to have, that was one of my big fears as a kid, that when Christ comes again, that's the topic of our subject this morning, the second coming of Christ, and when Christ comes again, somehow I'd be missed. Somehow everyone else, all my family would be gone, and I'd be left going, what am I doing here? And hopefully that's not the case. I know it won't be. This summer we've had a series. Pastor Steve has been preaching on Surprised by God. We've been looking at various characters from the Bible, like Moses, the parting of the Red Sea, and wow, that's a big surprise. We looked at the life of David, King David, and the surprise in that God would choose such a young person to be king of all of Israel. And other wonderful, surprising, and miraculous topics that we've been discovering. However, this morning, my title is somewhat different. It's Don't Be Surprised by God. Because not all surprises from God are good. And this morning, we're going to be looking together at Matthew chapter 24. And I'd like you to turn there with me if you're using the Bibles that's provided for you underneath the chairs. You'll find it on page 701. And we're looking at Matthew 24, verse 30. As you're turning there, I'd like to just mention briefly the context in which this passage comes about. This is 2 days before the Passover feast, which was a week long and was the time in which Jesus would be handed over, crucified, buried, and then rose again. So Jesus is gathering with his disciples, and he's warning them of his leaving. And he's also warning them that when he goes, things are going to get bad. They're going to get real bad, but that Jesus says, I will come again. And he announces that he will return. So let's read verses 30, Matthew 24, 30 through, 31 together. It's where Jesus mentions that he's going to come again. He says, at that time, the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the nations of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from the other end, or from one end of the heavens to the other. So Jesus says, I'm coming back. It's going to be big. It's going to be in the sky. Everybody's going to know it. And when I do, or in between now and when I do, I want to give you instructions. This is what's about to follow of while I'm gone, these are examples, these are parables to teach you about how you're to interact while I'm gone. I have a cold this morning. It's kind of a cough, nasal thing, so I'm sorry, but I'm going to take a sip of water. And now would be a good time also to take out your outline, if you haven't already done so, from your bulletin. We're going to, in the next following passage here, Jesus tells seven different examples, seven different parables about how his disciples should be while he's gone. And we're going to take from those parables three different points on our outlines, principles from this passage. The first one, so you are not surprised by Jesus' return. First one is be watchful. And this comes out of his discussion about the fig tree in verses 32 through 34. So I'm going to go ahead and read that. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that that it is near, right at the door. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. He's saying summer, it's not a surprise when summer comes, right? Because the trees change. They get softer, blossoms start to come from the trees, the flowers start coming out of the ground, the temperature starts warming up, it's rising. These are all signs that say that summer is coming. So that when summer comes, no one is surprised. You see the signs coming, you know it's here. Is it ever a surprise when summer's over? Yes. Because summers around here are way too short, and I'm constantly wondering where it went, but that's another subject, and we'll get back to Jesus' point here. He's saying there's signs, and don't be caught off guard at my coming. Be watchful of the signs. Be looking for them so that you are not surprised when I come. Well, what are the signs? The signs are, he's of course referring back to the section just previously that he'd already been talking about with his disciples, where he says there's going to be wars, there's going to be persecution, false messiahs are going to come and claim that they are him. And then it says, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken, and at that time, Christ will come. So some of those are pretty vague signs, and we kind of see them a lot. Well, it seems like there's always wars in certain parts of the world, there's always persecution, but Jesus says all these things have to take place. And he tells his disciples, be watchful, be looking, be trying to determine when I'm going to come back so that you are not surprised and not caught off guard. So the fig tree is his first example. The second example he gives right after that is the example of Noah. Verse 36, no one knows about the day or the hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Now, just before I keep reading, did you catch that? No one knows about the day or the hour. The angels don't. Not even the Son, but only the Father. Jesus is saying, I don't even know at what time I'm going to come back. So as he's telling his disciples this, he knows he's coming back. He knows what it's going to be like. He says there's signs in this coming, but not even the Son knows the exact hour. So only the Father does. So be watchful, be waiting. And he continues on, as it was written in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and given in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two will be in the field. One will be taken, the other left. Two women will be grinding with the handmill. One will be taken, the other left. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day the Lord will come. What's the issue of the day of Noah, as Jesus says here? Well, he says they're carrying on with their lives. They're eating, they're drinking, they're marrying, they're giving in marriage, they're doing all the normal things of life, they're having a good time, but in doing so, they were caught off guard. They had no idea what was about to come and the destruction that was on the way. They were settling for good things when God was wanting to give them better things. They were not being watchful, and as a result, they were deeply surprised by God. So Jesus gives this parable and says, don't be like that. Don't be like the people in Noah's day who were just carrying on with their life. It's pretty routine for them. He says, but be watching. Be watchful so that you are not surprised. The next example, Jesus just tells them one after the next, moving on to verse 43, talking about the thief. But understand this. If the owner of the house had known what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Excuse me. So he compares it to a thief and owning a home. And obviously, if we knew when he would come, you could be there and be ready and protect your house. But the problem is we don't know. So Jesus is saying, be ever watchful. Don't stop watching so that you're not caught off guard. Don't make the error in assuming that Jesus' coming is a long time off. That's what being watchful is all about. Don't think that, you know what, it's something that's just going to happen a long time away, so for now I can just relax, carry on with my life, and everything's going to be okay. Be ready, be watchful, because Jesus says he's coming soon. This week as I was preparing the message, I was thinking about myself, and I was thinking, have I been watchful? Is my normal life, my normal routine, one of looking for the coming of Christ and expecting the coming of Christ? Or have I been more like those in the days of Noah that were just carrying on with life, eating, drinking, enjoying life, and missing out on the bigger thing of what is about to happen? What does it look like to be watchful? Well, this is kind of a trite example, but my wife recently ordered dresses off the internet. There was a big spill. You guys ever been to slickdeals.net? I don't know. Probably. Anyway, it just go there. It's cool, but it's, you know, that's a sidebar. But it has all these coupons, and you can get everyone who finds a deal posted up there. So she found deals on dresses for, like, you know, $100 dresses for like $9, right? So she takes a risk because she can't try them on first, orders her size, and she is so excited about the dresses coming. Like, no sooner did she complete her order than she's looking up the tracking number on, you know, the postage box. And every day she'd look up the tracking number and be like, is it coming yet? And she's talking about it. And it just kind of consumed her. And she, like, even on Sunday she wanted me to go out and check the mail. And I'm like, honey, there's no mail on Sunday. It's not going to be like, I know. But she's just so excited about these dresses coming. And they came and they fit great and she's happy. But it stuck out to me, the intensity at which she was being watchful for the coming of the dresses. Every day it was on her mind. Every day she was going to the computer, looking up tracking numbers. Every day she was looking at the front porch, looking for the UPS truck to drive up and deliver her, you know, fabric goodness, right? So, and it's that type of intensity, I think, at which implanted in our hearts Jesus wants from us to expect his coming, that we are watchful, we are intent, looking for, could today be the day in which Jesus comes back? Well, that's the first point, so that you're not surprised by God. Be watchful. The second one is be waiting. If being watchful helps correct the error of assuming that Jesus' coming is a long time off, then be waiting will help correct the opposite error that Jesus' coming will be immediate. Jesus tells, just in the next chapter, he tells about the parable of the 10 virgins who were to be married to their bridegroom. And what happened is they're waiting for the bridegroom. They have lamps, they have oil, they go out, they're waiting for him. But the bridegroom, what happened? He was a long time in coming, right? It's like the bridegroom wasn't there when they thought he was going to be there. So some of them didn't bring enough oil for their lamps, and they had to go and get more oil, and as a result, they missed the bridegroom's coming. So Jesus is saying to wait, to be waiting for his coming. And what is waiting? Well, I was kind of thinking about it. In this context, I think waiting is the act of sustaining watchfulness. Waiting is when we're being watchful. I'm dying here. Waiting is the act of sustaining watchfulness. When you're being watchful and you're being intent on something happening and time goes by and it doesn't happen, then you begin to lose heart or you begin to become less intent on watching. And God says, wait, be strong in this. We all know what it's like to wait for something and to have nothing happen. Right? Maybe you've been waiting for employment and you've been looking for a job and it's been month after month and you're like, okay, any day now. Or maybe you've been in physical pain and you've been praying to God saying, all right, God, I need help with this. I cannot survive like this. Bring healing, bring comfort, bring something, and nothing happens and you're waiting. You're single and you've been waiting for a spouse and the days go on and you're just like, God, I need someone to share my life with. Or maybe it's a broken relationship that you wish you could mend and you can do nothing to do that. You're just waiting on the other person. And the act of time that goes on and on and on and on when nothing happens has a devastating effect to our heart, doesn't it? That process of waiting, and you're like, okay, God, where are you? Why haven't you done something here? And whatever the situation you're living with, whatever hopes or dreams or things that are on your heart that you're waiting for that have not happened yet, the result is all the same. We begin to lose heart. Now, this is what happened with me as it related to the second coming of Christ. I remember as a kid, there was this song. Maybe some of you remember it. I don't remember the exact title. But this gal sang about the coming of Christ again. And she was like, maybe he will even come before I take the next breath. She breathes in, it holds it. And it's like, okay, is he going to come before I take the next breath? And as a kid, you guys know that song? All right. The only one. That's fine. But no, I don't remember it that well. But the process of that, as a kid, I remember thinking, how crazy is that? I mean, let's have a moment of reality here. Okay, this was a promise given 2,000 years ago. And how many generations is that have gone by? How many people think that they're the generation Christ is going to come back? And you're holding your breath, and you think he's going to come before you exhale? But I think in my own heart back then, it was that process of saying, let's put a little realism to this urgency of Christ coming back and that it could happen at any time. It's like it hasn't happened in 2,000 years. It probably won't happen in my lifetime, right? But this is why Jesus tells us to be waiting, to be watchful, to not turn like that. Because at the moment that you least expect it, it could be the very moment that Jesus comes back. He says, be watchful because I could come at any time. And don't stop being watchful. Wait for me as I'm coming. So you don't get surprised by God, be watchful, be waiting. And the third one is be working. This is the third and final theme that Jesus picks up on out of the scripture. It comes out of verses 45 through 51. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servant in his household to give them the food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all of his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time. And he then begins to beat his fellow servants and eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. He says, be working. Don't be like an evil servant who the master goes away and he thinks, well, nothing's ever, you know, he's going to be a long time in coming. He comes back and finds him unfaithful. God says, be faithful. Be diligent to be doing what I left you to do and to be working hard. It reminds me, just this story here reminds me of an old fable. It's kind of an old story of where Satan was talking with his minions, we'll call them minions, who was trying to figure out a way to destroy humanity and uproot them and undermine the things of God. So one of the demons came up and said, I have an idea. He's like, tell them that there is no God, and then surely they'll turn into ruin. And Satan said, well, you know, that may deceive a few, but deep down throughout the world, most people know that there's a God, and it wouldn't have that far-reaching of effects. So they sat around and they thought some more, and then another demon raised his hand and says, tell them there's no hell, that there's no punishment, and then surely we'll deceive them and can overrun them. And Satan, in the same way, said, well, that may work for some people, but the worldwide people have a concept of judgment and of punishment, and it really wouldn't work very well. Finally, they had one last idea. They said, tell them there's no hurry. Tell them they have time. And Satan said, that's exactly what we will do, for this will almost surely deceive them all. Tell them there's plenty of time. There's no hurry. Though that's a fictitious story, there's a lot of truth packed into there. And it goes along with this quote that William Barclay said. He said, the most dangerous of all delusions is that there is plenty of time. I'm going to read that again. The most dangerous of all delusions is that there is plenty of time. And he continues on, the most dangerous day in a man's life is when he learns that there is such a word as tomorrow. Most dangerous day in a man's life is when he learns there's such a word as tomorrow. It's this thought of, you know what, someday I'll get to the things of the Lord, or someday God will return. But so often we live like someday will never come. We live like we're all in denial about death, don't we? I mean, at least I do. I don't know. It's like when somebody dies and they're not supposed to die, you know, no, you know, at the end of their life when they're all happy and everything, I'm always shocked. I'm like, you know, I can't. And even when they're getting close to that age, it's like, my grandmother passed away recently, 92 years old. And there was still, I mean, it was time for her, but I was still kind of shocked. I was like, you know, because I think we live in some sort of a denial that our lives will actually ever end. Or denial that, you know, yeah, I know one day it'll be over, but that's so far out there that I don't need to be worried about that today. And I can do what I want now. But yet, all these things, I think, are why Jesus wants to put today in our hearts. He wants to say, today, I want you to be watchful for my coming. Today, I want you to be waiting. And today, I want you to be working. I want you to live your life in a way today that you have no regrets if I were to come back today. I mean, think about it. If we knew that Jesus was coming back at 8 o'clock tonight, would we live our day any differently? Or would we live it the same? I don't know. I mean, I haven't been told he's coming back at 8, so... But it's that type of example. If we knew that he was coming in a week, would we live this week differently than we would otherwise? If we knew he was coming in a month, would we live the month differently? May we not one day have our master return to find us eating, drinking, and having a good time, but neglecting the job that he gave us before he left. When Christ returns, will we be surprised, or will we have been expecting him? When Christ returns, will we be embarrassed, or will we be overjoyed? When Christ returns, will we be found faithless, or will we be found faithful? So that you're not surprised when Jesus returns, be watchful, be waiting, and be working. Let's pray together. Lord, I admit in my own life and in my own heart, it has been easy to drift into a pattern of your coming or my death as being a long ways off. And in some ways, being in denial that those will really ever come. Lord, I pray that we might live each day as it's the day when you're going to return. Pray that we live each day in a way that we would be found faithful and that we would be found working hard. Lord, so that when you do return or that when you do choose to take us home, that we would stand before you and you would say, well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in the small things that I have entrusted you to. And as a result, I will give you so many more things and put you in charge of so much more. Lord, that is our passion, that is our desire, and Lord, that's the calling we've received. We love you and we pray these things in your name.